Shall I do a roll call for you, Michael? It's Glenn.
That would be great, Glenn. Thank you.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. On the call, we have Chuck Gomes, Michael Young, who is our acting chair for today, Victoria McEvedy, Claudio De Gangi, Deborah Hughes, and we have apologies from Olga Cavelli, who is traveling. And for staff, we have Julie Headland and Glenda Saint-Cherie. Thank you, Michael. Over to you.
Okay. So my understanding of the agenda that Olga suggested, I will do a little agenda bashing to start, was that we continue progressing through the documents, starting with the last couple of suggested edits for 1-1, and then we move to 1-2. And I apologize, I have missed the last couple of calls due to conflicts. But my understanding is that the group has been walking through the documents almost like on a line-by-line basis. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So we'll continue that progress. Does anyone want to add anything to the agenda? I'm sure we can fill the hour with that work, but if there's something else that people feel we need to address in a pressing fashion, we can add that and clear out a bit of time to deal with that as well. I'm not hearing anything, so we'll continue with the work. On 1-1, my understanding is that the group's been through the document. I've been through the document and fed back on the mailing list with one edit, and I think, Chuck, you had an edit as well. I think we're just down with 1-1 to looking at these last couple of suggestions. Is that correct?
Michael, this is Julie. We didn't actually quite finish going through the documents line by line.
Okay, where do we get to?
Others can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that we had gotten through to Section 2I. So Section 2, membership, and I think we've gotten through I. And that's new letter I because we had deleted the previous I, which is stricken in the document on the wiki. But I don't believe that we had begun to consider Section 3, Policy and Consensus, which is the final section. Could others confirm that? Does that sound correct?
That's my recollection, Julie.
Thank you very much, Victoria. So Michael, then that would mean that we would, I would suggest that we finish through Section 3 and then perhaps go back to the items that you and Chuck have suggested, or we can go back to the items that you and Chuck have suggested and then start on Section 3. It's entirely up to you.
Well, why don't we keep rolling through, finish the document, and then go back to the suggested edits. I'm looking at Section 3 on the wiki site. Is this all there is to it currently at this point?
Yes, Michael, that's it.
Oh, okay. Well, we should be able to go through that fairly, I would think, fairly quickly. So I'm not going to, obviously, it's a line or two. Does anyone have any issues, suggestions, concerns about what's stated in Section 3, Policy and Consensus?
Michael, this is Claudio. I had a comment about the last provision there. About working on the working group model for the purpose of reaching consensus.
Okay.
And my comment was basically that that sort of we should leave it up to the groups to decide how they want to work on or what type of consensus building mechanisms they want to include within their charters. But my view is that it would make sense for us to recommend that there is a consensus building mechanism, and it should be spelled out by the groups. I looked at it more that we should just sort of leave it up to them to decide, depending upon the particulars of their groups and what communities involve, things like that. So I looked at this provision as sort of a little too restrictive.
Okay. I think that's
Chuck,
actually a good point. Yeah,
Chuck,
go ahead. Go on. Chuck, go ahead.
Yeah, now obviously we don't know what the the final working group model recommendations are going to be yet. It'll be probably a few months before we know that. But what's, we have a pretty good concept of what that working group model is because we've been using it for the most part over the last several years in the genus. So what is restrictive about it?
Well, I guess what I see restrictive is that is just one particular way of, or one method of building consensus, and it just I didn't understand why we're telling groups this is how you have to do things.
Well, let's talk about some of the elements of that model. One of the key ones is that there's, you know, openness for participation. Is that too restrictive?
I don't think so. No.
Okay. And the idea is another key element is that rather than focusing on literal voting, the effort is to try and reach a position that most people will support. Is that too restrictive?
No.
And I won't keep going. But my point is that, you know, it doesn't seem to me that recommending that the working group model be followed. Now, maybe we could say something like that the key principles of the working model be implemented as appropriate in the in each constituency and stakeholder group. But by saying, you know, I'm not seeing what's restrictive about the approach that is coming forward on a working group model.
Could I just jump in and say, I have to say, surprisingly, I agree with you, Chuck. Claudio, I'm just wondering, would it be helpful to give us some examples, put this into a practical context for us? Your concern?
Well, I mean, I don't have any specific examples. I'm just thinking that this working group model, from my understanding, created for cross group deliberations that take place across the entire GNSO, and I just kind of thought that model was being created for a specific type of policy development and consensus that takes place within the GNSO, and then the groups, which are operating on the level beneath that, there might be different requirements the groups might have. I mean, it's a different context. The structure, the groups, you're not talking about five different stakeholders coming together and working together within one group. So I just looked at the context being different and how consensus might reach at the GNSO level and then perhaps within a smaller subset of the GNSO. I could see there being value in recommending that as guidance for the groups, or I just didn't understand why we're sort of saying this is how you have to reach consensus, and you cannot come up with an alternative way of doing it. I didn't see that anywhere in the BGC report.
Put myself in the queue after you, Victoria. So go ahead.
I just think we should pull focus and remember that we are trying to bring some commonality and simplify things. And as Chuck said, it's tried and tested. It's spent a long time being tested. It's still fairly flexible. I just think, it would really move everybody forward, this kind of recommendation, in a very positive way. So in the absence of a more precisely articulated objection, it seems it's a bit of a knee-jerk reaction to just say, let's make everything guidance, and then it's just ignored. So I just really like to understand, I'm afraid I find your objection too vague, Claudio, when trying to, from my own perspective, my own opinion, when balancing against the possible benefit of a recommendation like this. Anyway, that's my comment.
So it's Michael. I'm going to jump in. I have to say, Claudio, I feel your concern, and I see where you're coming from. it does feel like, to some degree, you could be in a position where the GNSO working group model has the potential somewhere down the line of being applied, I guess, in a less constructive way, and that's the general fear. I think the other side of that coin, and it's where I tend to lean myself more so, is pretty much what I think Chuck and Victoria is getting at. I'm going to emphasize kind of a different element of the concern. If you don't put a stake in the ground with what a working group model looks like, one way or the other, and you do make it, or you change the wording of this to say something like, you know, GNSO working group model, or similar consensus building mechanism that is well described, you leave the opportunity that someone will create or put forward a consensus building mechanism that is biased, subjective, and maybe really not a very truly a consensus building mechanism. You leave it open for less accountability in the process. Whereas if there's a lot of people that will be depending on this GNSO working group model, so they'll, if that is the model, if we all focus on that, it's going to get a lot of attention, a lot of scrutiny, and I seriously doubt it will go off track, because I think there are too many stakeholders and interested parties in making sure it stays true to its intentions.
Now, put Chuck back in the queue, please.
Chuck, go ahead.
Okay. Now, I can see the possibility where the working group model itself may have some recommendations that are specifically applicable to a policy development process, for example. And so I recognize what Claudio is saying in that regard. So maybe what we could do is go back into the BGC recommendation with regard to the working group model and why they were recommending that, and instead pull out the key elements of that if they're mentioned there. I don't have that in front of me, so I don't know whether they are or not. Or maybe just tweak the wording here a little bit to cover a situation like that. Because it is true that some of the recommendations may relate specifically to a PDP, okay, and that may not be the case in a particular deliberation in a constituency or stakeholder group.
I'm sorry, Chuck. Could you explain that? I don't understand why. I don't understand the.
Well, the working group model, and I haven't looked at their latest draft on this. Is anybody on this call on that team? No. Okay. One of the primary purposes of the working group model is to provide guidelines for the actual implementation of a PDP, a policy development process. In a constituency or stakeholder group, they won't always, in fact, probably more often than not, they're not going to specifically be making decisions within their group about a policy development process. So it is possible some of the details of some of the recommendations won't be applicable because it won't be a PDP. I still
don't understand that. I'm sorry. Why would a group – so you're talking about – forgive me, I'm just trying to understand because I think it's very important. But so you're saying in a constituency or stakeholder environment, there might be a particular subcommittee or something set up to deal with that group's views on, a PDP or some other policy issue, GNSO policy issue. But then do you have a particular concern why that would be different from anything else in terms of reaching consensus and structure, apart from confidentiality perhaps?
Let me give you a specific example. So the working group model is going to recommend procedures for reaching, developing recommendations for policy. Okay? Some of the actions of a constituency or stakeholder group, for example, they're going to have to elect officers. Do they need to follow the working group model when they elect officers? They're going to have to make decisions about their own charter and so forth.
So why is that different to any other committee set up for any kind of other reason? Why is it so onerous to follow some basic meeting procedure in a policy context than any other subcommittee context?
Some of the procedures, because they're oriented towards policy development, may not be applicable to other decisions that a group needs to make.
I still don't understand. Well, I really don't understand the distinction between a policy question and anything else. Give me another kind of example then. So if it's not policy, what might it be?
Okay, I mentioned an election. Approval of a statement of support or opposition. I mentioned a change to the charter. The awkwardness that we have right here is that we don't have the working group model in front of us because it's still in development. So,
Chuck, this is Julie. I do have the latest version open, which was published as of yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's a certain section you'd like me to go to, or I can send all of you the link if you'd like.
Yeah, why don't you send us the link? Well, Julie, where we need, where I'd like you to go is to the recommendation that the working group model be used. And then see if there's any supporting information in that regard.
Yeah, let me see if I can find that. I'll look through it.
I mean, most of the work of the constituencies, to my mind, in my experience, is policy-related, for example.
Yeah. Sorry, Victoria, I want to weigh in when you get a chance, when you finish there.
Yeah, sure. So I think it's actually, this is very important. This is going to be a carve-out. I think it's quite important that we really identify the issue, and I have to say I'm still none the wiser myself as to why it should be a carve-out. If the concern, and it's been discussed before in another context, if the concern is that these groups, you know, you don't want to drive true and open debate underground, that some of the problem is about confidentiality. I don't think that really comes into this recommendation here. It might come into some of the issues we're about to discuss in the second document, but I don't know if it's an issue here. But I just want us to be quite clear about what the issue is and why policy is different. And I also would just note that I think it's a line in the sand, because I think it's going to be very difficult to say what's a policy-related issue and what's not. So it's potentially a fairly important carve-out if that's where you're going. Over to you, Michael.
Okay. So I'm going to try and really boil down the question here and see whether or not, as a group, we can answer it, because I think everyone's put their points of view on the table here. The question I'm hearing is whether or not we apply rigidity to this statement or not. And the concern that I'm hearing, I'm paraphrasing and rolling this up, the concern I'm hearing is that rigidity is based on a working group model that isn't finalized as of yet and could change over time. So we're tying a rigidity or requirement with these groups to something that is not necessarily under their control and or their influence as time goes on. And I think that's the concern I'm hearing.
That's correct.
Okay. So, you know, as much I do think that that is a valid concern personally. If you tie groups and their ability to function to a model that they don't necessarily have direct influence on, particularly if they're in the middle of trying to achieve work objectives, even if there is a process for trying to get change or modifications done to the GNSO working group model over time, I'm sure it's going to have its own lengthy process and consensus building to change that model. So, you know, group is, particularly if you look at some of the stuff that's happened over the last few months, the group's been, you know, designated with a timeline that's important to the entire community, then it gets awkward for them very fast. And we almost put them in a position where they either miss their objectives or they violate this rigidity that's on the table here. So, you know, is the right thing to do, given what we're facing here, that a little bit of flexibility, maybe at the beginning of this line by saying something, where applicable, group shall function on the GNSO working group model? I don't know, but it seems that probably the conservative thing to do is add a little bit of flexibility here to address that rigidity issue.
I'd like to get in the queue.
And Michael, this is Julie. I'd like to get in the queue, too. I do have some language from the current working group guidelines document. That would be helpful.
Okay. Well, why don't you go first, Julie, then, because maybe that'll help inform our conversation.
Okay, so the document is working group guidelines dated 28 January, developed by the PPSC working group work team. In the background of the working group guidelines document, the document states that the working group work team, this latter group was tasked with developing a working group model which should become the focal point for policy development and enhance the policy development process by making it more inclusive and representative and ultimately more effective and efficient. The document goes on to say, to this end, the working group work team has developed this document entitled Working Group Guidelines, which brings together two different elements of the working group process. On the one hand, it addresses what should be considered in creating, purposing, funding, staffing, and instructing slash guiding a work group to accomplish the desired outcome, the chartering process, and secondly, what guidance should be provided to a work group on elements such as structuring, norming, tasking, reporting, and delivering the outcomes as chartered, in parens, the working group process. End of quote there. So I note for the purpose of this discussion that these are working group guidelines that have been developed as part of the working group model. So I don't know if we wanted in our reference in our document to reference the working group model or perhaps working group guidelines, which would one would think be a somewhat less restrictive restrictive recommendation, as these are guidelines and not a model per se. But I could be misunderstanding something here. I'm just putting that out for discussion.
Well, okay. Let me throw out some suggested language in that. I didn't realize that the working group itself was really just a series of guidelines, which means our statement in this document is more rigid than the actual guidelines themselves. So perhaps what we need to do is keep it in flow with the working group, the concept of guidelines, which they are. Yep, sorry, Victoria. In fact, I think I jumped ahead of you inadvertently. Why don't you go ahead, then I'll come back to that.
I mean, Julie, thank you for that timely intervention, because I think that's actually very useful. I mean, what I take from that is that the working group was really developed with policy, specifically with policy in mind. Michael, I would take a slightly different angle on where you were just going with your interpretation of the flexibility of the guidelines and that this should match them, because what I would say is that there's more than enough flexibility in the model itself, which is, as I said before. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, it's a knee-jerk reaction to always just add in where appropriate, where applicable, and allow everyone to continue as before. But, I mean, you know, I know I'm repeating myself, but my own concern is that, for example, you know, the people that the groups that really are, what can I say, what's a diplomatic way of putting it, the groups whose behaviour needs dramatic improvement on things like basic transparency, et cetera, in the board governance, in the LSE's own language, they will continue as before and ignore things that are mere guidelines. So, for example, you know, by adding where applicable or changing shall to something else and taking away that rigidity, you know, the whole purpose of reform is negated. So I can't overstate that, quite frankly. The IPC will continue, excuse me, Claudio, but it's true, the IPC will continue as before. And, you know, we've really wasted our effort. But anyway, that's my comment.
So let me jump in here. Victoria, I hear what you're saying. I think the way this is worded right now, though, is it's worded in such a way that you have to function on the guidelines and comply with the guidelines. That says that you're treating the guidelines like absolute directives the way this is worded, I think. So maybe let me suggest a little language here and see if this comes down the middle. I'm going to suggest that we say the following. Groups shall respect the GNSO working group guidelines for the purpose of reaching consensus versus function, and change model to guidelines because that emphasis the fact that they are not absolutes, but they are guidelines.
Okay, I have an alternative suggestion for amendment. If it's going to be amended, I think that's far too extreme. That's a very dramatic amendment, and I think it goes much, much, much further than is necessary. I mean, if anything, if you really wanted to add flexibility, which I don't agree with, you should be changing, you need only change the word shall to recommended. And you could add model, with model, you could also add guidelines.
Model and guidelines. Sorry, can you, how do you use the word? Read it off for me, Victoria, so I can hear how.
So instead of group shall function, well, why don't we start with, the sentence should start, it is recommended.
It is recommended, okay.
That groups, and take out the word shall, function on the word model and guidelines.
That group shall.
No, take out shall.
Or the group's function, okay, yep. On the GNSO working group model and guidelines. I'm okay with that, Claudio. I think that addresses your issue, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it does address my issue. I mean, I still don't think I sort of agree with that statement for some of the reasons we've already said, that the model really isn't fleshed out. And I see that model as being developed for a specific purpose, a specific context, and I see this context being different. But if that's the feeling that that you all have, that it's a good idea to recommend that groups, you know, look at that for guidance, and I'm okay with that.
Is everyone else okay with an amendment along those lines?
I think that's okay.
And any objections?
I mean, I would have preferred the language to remain as it was, but I can live with the amendment, I suppose.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your effort to reach consensus, Victoria. It's helpful to the group and to the objective.
Michael, this is Julie. I have amended the version of the document on the wiki and saved the change, so it should now be.
Well, let me refresh it. Let's see if I can see it now.
Changes are in all caps and strike out where appropriate.
Okay. All right. So I think we've got that. And we'll, any other issues on Section 3 or points of discussion?
Just a second. I'm focusing on the language. I've got a minor point, but I want to focus on this first.
Sure.
I don't think we need the word "and." Why is the word "and" in there? The function on the GNSO working group model and guidelines. The working group model guidelines. It's working group model guidelines, is it not? I don't think "and" makes sense there.
Oh, I thought there was a model and there was guidance.
Well, I was just looking at the BGC recommendations and what. What they recommended is that the working group model concept be followed, okay? And what the work team has been tasked with is developing guidelines for that working group model. So "and" doesn't make sense logically, I don't think. I don't think it changes the meaning.
I thought there were two different documents. I remember, I don't have it in front of me, I'm afraid, I'm not looking at my screen, but I thought there were two different documents.
Well, There are two different work teams. One of them is working on the revision of the PDP itself, the policy development process that is in the bylaws.
No, I didn't mean that. I mean, for the working group model, there are two separate documents. There's the model, and then there's guidelines about the use of the model.
I'm not aware of that.
Let me jump in here for a second. I can clarify. There is only one document, the working group guidelines.
Right.
Let me jump in and ask the question. Chuck, is there any harm in having the "and" in there, or is it just...
Probably not. It doesn't make very much sense, but it's probably not any harm.
Well, you know, given we have a lot of work to move through, if you're okay with it and then you don't think it does harm, I suggest we just move on.
Okay, that's fine. The minor comment, when we finalize this document, let's do footnotes in a way that are standard rather than the way they're done in this document.
Chuck, this is Julie. They don't show up as normal footnotes on the wiki.
Yeah, and that's fine. I just wanted to make that. I said it was minor. It's just a matter of let's make sure that they, you know, that when we deliver something, that they show up properly.
Right. Yeah. This is Julie. Chuck, I'll make sure that they do. Thanks.
All right. Are we okay to move on, guys?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. So I'm trying to follow this on the wiki, but it looks to me like the first suggested edits are in E. Am I missing any other earlier ones?
This is really my stuff.
Yep, section 2E. Is that correct, Julie? Have I missed any other ones?
No, Michael, I believe that's correct. This is Julie.
Okay. So these were the edits I think I suggested. How do people feel about these?
I'm just reviewing them again now.
Could someone read them? I'm sorry, I'm not on my screen. I'm not looking at the wiki.
Sure.
Sorry.
So I'll read it out for you, and I'll state where the change was. Status of a new application and admission decision, as far as possible, shall be publicly available at the option of the applicant, and an applicant shall be kept informed about it. In particular, the applicant shall be advised, the original language went like this, the applicant shall be advised of the gist of any objection to the application, and be given the opportunity to reply with clarification. The problem I have with that language is that I'm not sure what gist would mean to somebody. Gist is a subjective term. Gist is interpretive. So I suggested that the language be adjusted as the following. In particular, the applicant shall be advised of any objection to the application, comma, be given the opportunity to ask clarifying questions about the objection, comma, and be given the opportunity to reply to the objection with clarification.
Michael, question in that regard, you know, being advised about the objection without some detail doesn't help very much if you don't know why the objection was placed and whether of the gist is the right terms or not. If my application has been objected to, and I don't know why it was objected to, how do I respond?
Right. So that's why I suggested I added in the language, the applicants be given the opportunity to ask clarifying questions about the objection.
Yeah, but asking clarifying questions and getting answers to those are two different things.
So there might be a way through this. Could we just add objection and reasons?
That would work for me. That's what I'm getting at.
Okay. I still think they should also be given the opportunity to ask clarifying questions. But
yeah, agreed. I totally agree.
Oh,
but,
me too. Yeah.
Yeah. But you can't ask good clarifying questions if you don't know the reasons of the
objection.
Okay,
so after of any objection, we would add, in particular, the applicant shall be advised of any objection and reasons for said objections to the application.
Well, just put with reasons.
With reasons.
Work?
think so.
Now, I have to say, I have one point on the whole reply clarification. I'd like to draw a distinction between the fact that they're allowed to reply and they're allowed to clarify. Because you can just imagine someone trying to read down the right to reply to a mere right to seek clarification, which is, or to just provide clarification. And at the end of the day, I want it was originally to answer, but people felt that might suggest a legal pleading, like a formal court document or something. But I'd quite like to just sort of make it clear that they really do have an opportunity to respond to the substance of the reasons, right? Not just to ask clarifying questions or provide clarifying information, because you might find somebody taking a very pedantic view on that language.
Okay, so why don't we take, I think that's a good point. Why don't we do something like this, Victoria, and be given the opportunity to reply to the objection with clarification or to reply in general?
That works for me.
Everyone else okay with that?
Yeah, I think so.
Michael, this is Julie. So I'm not sure if I captured all of this. I know that we've taken out of the gist, but
right.
With reasons, was that put in,
yes.
And where did that appear?
That replies after of any objection.
Okay, of any objection with reasons?
Right.
Okay.
Or would it be better to say of any objection and the reasons for the objection?
Sure. That's fine.
Okay, Michael, just to make sure I have it clear, may I read the amended version?
Absolutely.
In particular, the applicant shall be advised of any objection and the reasons for the objection to the application and be given the opportunity to reply with clarification or to reply in general.
That didn't cover Victoria's suggestion to see the reply and to provide clarification. Is that what you said, Victoria?
Well, no, I think it does cover my issue because
I think it does. Okay, I'm fine then. I thought it maybe didn't. So that if you're satisfied, that's fine.
Yeah.
I think the only thing we're missing though is the opportunity for them to ask clarifying questions about the objection. So if they felt that the reasons given were inadequately expressed, we've missed the step.
Okay, that's what I wasn't sure if that was staying in. Then let me, that's staying in, let me read it one more time if you'll bear with me to make sure that I have
sure.
it. Okay. In particular, the applicant shall be advised of any objection and the reasons for the objection to the application be given the opportunity to ask clarifying questions about the objection, and be given the opportunity to reply with clarification or to reply in general.
Perfect.
Yeah.
All right, sounds good.
Could I interject here? And could someone, Claudia, you and I were supposed to cooperate on some language for 2D1, weren't we, as homework?
Yeah.
And we didn't. So I'm just wondering if we could have a quick look at that. I don't know what it's currently reading. I confess I haven't looked.
I can read it for you if you like.
Thank you very much.
Section 2D1, admission criteria shall be predictable and objective and not arbitrary or discretionary. Where eligibility depends on participation in a certain sector of business, then applicants shall be entitled to submit evidence of their participation in that sector. I think the language at hand that we discussed was the predictable and objective and not arbitrary or discretionary.
Yes, I thought we'd made changes, and I thought that...
We did make changes, predictable and objective. The words predictable and the word objective were added.
Oh, that's right. Okay, fine. I think that's fine as it is. I don't know what Claudio thinks.
Yeah, I'm okay. I'm okay with that.
All right.
Okay. So can we move to F then? Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. really, we have a few questions I think you put in here. Chuck, do you want
to
give
sure,
us a
Sure, I'll talk to
it.
If you go to the second sentence there, it says the group shall select such a neutral third party in consultation with ICANN/GNSO. What do we mean by ICANN/GNSO? In the community, both terms are used to mean very different things. Sometimes when people say ICANN, they mean the ICANN staff or board, ICANN the corporation, ICANN the community. Same with the GNSO, really. Often they mean the GNSO council, but there are GNSO constituencies and GNSO stakeholder groups, and there are GNSO individual participants and so forth. If we're not more precise here, how do you consult with whatever you're consulting with? So I just think, and I'm not sure how you want to fix it, but I don't think it works to say in consultation with ICANN/GNSO.
I agree with that, Chuck. I think, an officer should be named. That's what is quite common in these sort of clauses. If you want someone to nominate a mediator, if you want a third party, if you want sort of an independent nomination for a mediator or an arbitrator or whatever, it's quite common that you say the head of the regulatory organization or whatever. So, I would say that should be the chairman of the board or the chair of GNSO council or, someone like that. Like, it should just be an individual or an office holder.
Well, would it work to say in consultation with the GNSO council?
Actually, I have to say, now that we're thinking about that, is it really right? It's not really right to have the group consulting. They should just ask that individual. No, I don't think it should be the council. It shouldn't be a political decision because then you have neutrality imperiled, don't you?
Yeah, right.
But I mean, I don't really think the group should get to consult. I think the group should go and ask. I mean, well, this is just how it works in other contexts, like I say.
Yeah.
So, both one or other, I mean, in an arbitration context, either party would go to the head of the law society or the head of the whatever regulatory organization was and ask, and that person would nominate an impartial third party. But I don't know if we want to interfere with the consultation principle.
Well, could we just delete that sentence and they have a right to appeal to a neutral third party?
No, you have to provide machinery or no one knows where you are. So you either have to say, is there an existing procedure that could be referred to and incorporated by reference? But, basically in a sort of small, this is almost like an arbitration clause, you've got to provide the machinery and say what rules will govern. Otherwise, it's a mess,
Yeah, it's not end otherwise.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying. The working groups, there's language in the charters that, if somebody is decided to be disruptive to the working group, there are steps that are taken to deal with the issue, and they're progressive. But there's not it first of all is supposed to be appealed to the chair of the working group, and then it's in our charter too, I think. And if there's disagreement there, then it can go to the liaison, I think, with the council, and then up to the count. I don't know, Julie, you may be able to help me, and then I think it goes up to the council chair or something like that. So it's a progressive step thing to allow for it, but there's no neutral body that I'm aware of that we use.
Well, there's the ombudsman, isn't there? But, you could get the ombudsman to nominate a third party. But, I mean, to be honest, if that's going to – it should really have a bit more work. And you know what I mean? I mean, it should go to an independent neutral under one of the neutral boards or whatever and under those neutral rules, because there is provision for that for other kind of disputes, but more sort of policy disputes, aren't there?
Do we need – a little bit of research at this point on what our options are. Maybe ask Julie to do some research and see what choices we might have.
Michael, this is Julie. We don't have a current policy for disputing an application, someone's application to join a constituency. So there is no current process.
I hear that. I'm wondering, by research, I mean, are there other mechanisms in ICANN that could take on that because they're fulfilling similar
Yes, I know one. Actually, you're right. You know, isn't there a remedy? Isn't there a whole procedure? I remember being on the working group when it was one working group a long time ago. But isn't there a procedure for people who apply to set up a constituency and are rejected? Isn't there a procedure for? Isn't there some sort of procedure for someone who tries to do a generic top level domain who gets rejected and they go off? Remember, draft of language.
Well, you know. I'm actually thinking of situations where people were rejected for membership, and the way that's been handled, I think, is that they've appealed to the general counsel's office, and the general counsel's office goes back to the bylaws and you know decides, and frankly they've been pretty benign about enforcing anything. So, but I'm not aware of a specific procedure.
There, I can't think of an applicable procedure within ICANN that currently exists. Although Chuck, what you've mentioned is, now that you've mentioned it, is I think probably as close to a procedure as we've had for dispute resolution.
Does some sort of a neutral body need to be created within the GNSO? I'm not sure how we do that, but I'm just trying to explore.
I don't think it would be neutral. I mean, it's supposed to be.
Yeah, no, I understand. That's why I said I'm not sure how you'd do it.
I mean,
Julie, what about in consultation with the ICANN General Counsel? Would that be considered a neutral third party?
I think
no.
So.
We're really General Counsel neutral?
No.
For the referral.
I mean, the General Counsel. They could, I guess, if you need some. No, it's not that. It's not ideal.
It's not that that's the third neutral third party. It's that in consultation with ICANN General Counsel to select such a neutral party.
In consultation with ICANN General Counsel.
General Counsel's office is what we'd want to say, too.
Yeah.
Julie,
I mean, we can put that in there, but we're kind of making it up, right? I almost feel like it's beyond the. I think it's something almost that this group should be flagging, but I don't know if it's out of our depth to be determining the right group.
Well, what we can do, and what we've done with recommendations and other work teams, this is Julie, is run the recommendations by the ICANN legal staff. And, you know, if they think there's a problem or it's unprecedented or it's something that conflicts with the bylaws or the scope, then they can advise in that respect. So we could put this in, and we can, as we've done with other recommendations and other work teams, have the ICANN legal staff take a look at them.
Okay, I'm fine with that if everyone else is.
So is what we're saying then, the group shall select such a neutral third party in consultation with the ICANN General Counsel's office?
No, I don't think we're saying that. I understood Judy to be saying, and I think it's a good idea, is that we should ask for some input from the General Counsel's office about their views on an appropriate path for a recommendation. And
so in other words, not make a specific recommendation, but recommend a step for resolving this.
No. Just now we should go and just ask them to help us with
this
clause.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
Because they might know what would be appropriate, and they might be able to give us some suggestions or language that has been used in another context that we may not be aware of.
So we put this sentence in square brackets for now, and check with the General Counsel's office.
Yeah, that's what I would think would be a
way forward. And I would actually go so far as to remove ICANN/GNSO and just put, you know, a bunch of X's in quotation and ask them who they think that should be in their opinion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Julie, did you catch all that? Julie?
Sorry, I was on mute. Yeah, no, I was on mute. Sorry. I'll go ahead and I've noted that, and basically what I'm doing is putting some question marks and curly brackets, so it ends with in consultation with, you know, question mark. And what I, you know, what I'll do is, I think, you know, we'll highlight this sentence to ICANN legal staff and ask them to look at it. But if there's no objection, I can have them look at the set of recommendations and read through them. I don't know if that's a procedure we want to take in general with these recommendations, and I'm not sure it's necessary. So otherwise, I can have them look at, you know, just that sentence within the context.
I think you ought to just focus on that sentence and the context in F. If you ask general counsel to look at too much, we're not going to get a timely response, and
correct.
Understandably. So I think we
this
should...
This is really... I think you're right, Chuck. I'll go ahead and just... I'll give them the full thing so they can see the context, but ask them to focus on that sentence.
That's great. Thank you.
Sure. And I have to apologize, but I have another meeting I have to chair for the SAC in 4 minutes. So
yeah. Julie, can... Given that, I'd like to jump to some housekeeping, please. You know, I think we've gone as far as I can with this document for today, but we'll circle back to it on the next meeting. I think we need to jump to some quick housekeeping. I'm looking at the rate of progress we're making through these documents, and I think we're making really good progress and that we're finding consensus, and I appreciate everyone's efforts in that. But it's clear, I mean... We're just finishing up 1-1 now. We've got 1-2 to go through, and that's quite a long document. I'm sure there'll be lots of vibrant discussion in that one as well. So I'm thinking that the frequency of an hour once every 2 weeks is at that rate, it will take us horrendously long on the calendar to get our work done. So I think we have a couple of options for the group. I think we can either extend the length of our meetings every 2 weeks, or we can go to weekly meetings. But I think we need to up the pace of work here. What do people think about?
Both.
Sorry, Victoria?
I agree, Michael. I think we should do both.
Okay. So we could extend it. Why don't we take a little middle line? We could try for 90-minute meetings weekly. For a bit until we get through we'll see what our pace is like and we'll see how fast we're getting through these documents.
I would just add, we made incredible progress last week with the two-hour meeting because we got through almost the whole of that document. So I appreciate this has been extended, but...
Yeah. I also think it's easier to, frankly, when you're going through these documents, not to have two-week breaks in between your thinking because you stay a little fresher on it. So if everyone, what's people's availability? Can we schedule, at least for the next few weeks, a weekly meeting at 9 o'clock and try and push it to 90 minutes?
Well, I often have a conflict in the hour, and it'll be a bigger conflict if it's that, but you guys don't necessarily have to have me on every call. I can try and chime in afterwards.
And,
Chuck, what if
Michael,
we started a half hour earlier?
Yeah, Michael, this is Julie. I should say that I have a standing meeting now with the ESSAC Executive Committee at 10 o'clock Eastern Time now each Friday. So while Rob could step in for me, my preference would be if we could start earlier, then I can be sure if we did a 90-minute call that I could be on for the whole call.
My preference isn't for starting earlier, but that's because I'm already starting at 6 in the morning. Would it make sense to do a doodle for maybe finding another time that works?
This is Julie. Chuck, we can try that, but as you know, we have now something like 18 different teams, so finding a time that doesn't conflict with another team is really pretty tough.
Yeah, and this time slot, I'm sorry to say, I mean, it does work for everybody on the whole, so I think we should stick with it.
Julie, we can do them as two-hour meetings or 90-minute meetings. What I'll just need to do is Rob will just have to step in for me.
Well, but Chuck also has a conflict at the 10 o'clock point as well frequently. So, Chuck, what do you think? Really that leaves more you with the issue of having to start earlier. Is that...
How often are we meeting?
Weekly for probably, I would say, 3 or 4 weeks, and then we can probably back it off, I would say, given the pace I've seen today.
Go ahead and do it earlier.
Okay. I apologize for that. I know it's awkward.
Awkward isn't the word. Awkward isn't the word I would choose, but.
Agonizing.
But that's fine, Michael.
So Michael, this is Julie. I do have to go off, but I've noted then that for the next 4 weeks, that meetings will be scheduled from 8:30 to 10 o'clock Eastern time. We'll do the conversions, of course.
Why don't you go ahead and start them at did you say 8:30?
Yeah, I did.
Why don't you start them at 8, and it'll be even worse for me, but that at least avoids my other conflict.
Okay. All right, so 8:10 Eastern time, and Victoria, then, you know, obviously we'll make the conversion for you and others for the next several weeks on a weekly basis.
Sorry, okay. So that's 2-hour meetings instead of 1.5.
Yeah,
right.
But...
Glenn.
Right.
Okay, thanks.
Can we go 90 minutes instead of 2 hours?
We can.
And end at 9:30? Sorry, yeah?
Start at 8 and go to 9:30?
Yeah. My regular conflict starts at 9:30.
Oh, okay. Well, that works for me. What about others?
It's
fine for me.
So, Glenn, then it would be 8 o'clock to 9:30.
Yes, 8 o'clock Eastern time.
Right.
Not quite as bad as 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, but it's so bad for you, Chuck. I know.
I'm really sorry, folks. I have to leave, but I'll follow up with ICANN Legal. All the changes we've made today are reflected on the wiki, so we're set there. And I'll follow up with some notes.
By the way,
we should check with
what's her name, who's also on the West Coast. Why am I blank?
Krista Pepek. Krista Pepek.
Oh, Krista.
Yep. Yeah. So it's not just me.
Oh, that's right. Well, I'll put out the proposed time, and I'll ask members to indicate, you know, if they have a problem with it.
Okay.
Great.
Better go, Julie.
Yep. Bye,
everyone. Thank you.
Thanks, Michael, and everyone else.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.